Garrett in a minute. Would you be willing to lead us in prayer? So good to have lots of people back. It was for those that missed for the past week or two, I'll give you that much time to make up on your homework to get that back into me. There will be give you time to prep for the quiz that's coming. We are studying Genesis, and so we've been talking about Adam and Eve. We went through genealogy. We're in the flood right now. So the first few chapters of Genesis. I'm going to do a little bit of review here at the beginning, and then we can talk through. We spent time on the ark last week, and we're really in the heart of the flood this week. So we'll talk through that more here in just a minute. Garrett, if you would open us with prayer. Years and years ago when we lived in Pontiac, went through the whole Bible with Alan Roth at a high level, kind of going through the periods in some level of detail. And so Alan always comes up with these gimmicky things, but so Genesis 5 and Genesis 10, so 5 is genealogy and 10 is genealogy, but so 6, he always said that the 6 looks a little bit like an ark. That's the building of the ark. I think it would float, kind of, maybe. He's like, it doesn't have a sail, but, you know. 7 is the waters rise. 8 is the waters abate. You can start seeing, feeling a little Allen in that, waters abate. So the waters go down. And 9 is rainbow. And he's like, yeah, you can kind of see a rainbow across the top of the 9 there, so... I can never, every time I think about Genesis, I think about him calling this an ark, and this a rainbow, and waters abate, and then 7's easy, because the waters have to get there somehow, so there you go. So we talked about the ark. We're kind of in between working through 7 and 8 today, and then next week we'll go over the rainbow, and then, and on. So let's do some quick review here. So we talked through timeline of if we stick to the biblical genealogies, we get that the earth is about 6,000 years old. We started with Adam and Eve about 4,000 BC, and we spent a lot of time there. The first few chapters were focused on Adam and Eve. Genesis 5 covered about 1,500 years and brought us up to the flood, which is where we are now. And for my class, we will stop just as we bring Abraham into the picture. Last week we spent time, or not last week, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the brothers, some of the genealogy. And so we went through kind of something that I thought was interesting in between chapter 4 and chapter 5. So 4 talks about Cain and Abel. So So if you have the first generation being Adam and Eve, second generation being Cain and Abel, then in chapter 4, we get the lineage of Cain. And we talked about being careful not to mix up. There's some names that exist in both genealogies. We're going to go through another genealogy here in a minute. But we talked about the things that we heard and learned about with Cain's family and compared it to Seth, who and his family. And if we talk about the seventh generation here and what that looked like, so Lamech murdered someone and then he boasted about it. He said, hey, if Cain murdered Abel and God was going to come on him, I did so much bigger than that. I'm going to get seven times that on me, and was boasting about the murder. He had two wives, and his children built, well, so Enoch built a city, Jubal dwelled in tents and livestock, Jubal played the lyre and pipe, Tubal Cain, the forger of implements and bronze. They focused in on like amoral things, but when we compare them to Seth's generation, that there, I think there's this comparison of here is a lineage that did not focus on God. They focused in on things of the world, things that were not bad, but they were not centered on God, where Seth's lineage did. It says these people walked after God, followed God, and we know that Enoch didn't die. He got to walk with God. And so you see this comparison between Cain's lineage and Seth's lineage, people of God and people of the world. And we have a lot of detail around Lamech's family and not centered around God, and Seth's family being godly people. That's a generalization. Obviously, we know that there are people in Seth's that aren't good and likely people in Cain's that were good. But I think there's a comparison happening here with the seventh generation that occurs. And so you see Lamech's sons not focusing on God, where you see Seth's lineage, generally speaking, focusing on God. And so in Seth's generation, we have following all the way to Noah. So Methuselah, there being the guy that lived the longest, so we know him. And then Lamech and Noah. And so we're getting Seth's lineage to Noah, where Cain's lineage ends. Then we talk some timelines here purely from the basis that I think it's helpful to understand these people were living so long that how connected they would have been. And so this is Seth, so Adam to through Seth, his, so the green on the right-hand side from the previous chart, this is their that lineage. But if you look at, I think I have one more. If you look at Adam, so these are really close to like the right link to line up. There would have been 14 years overlap between Lamech and Adam. So I don't know that they talked, but Lamech could have had conversations with Adam and had direct connection to these stories. That when, so by the time the flood comes, and you think about Noah could have had, Lamech could have had direct access to the first man, and Noah could have had that directly from his dad. And so you see this, look how close these stories would have been to Noah. And then we talked about the flood, the year that the flood happened. It is interesting, worth noting, that Methuselah and Noah's father, so Noah's dad and grandpa, both died the year of the flood. Like we don't know any more than that, to my knowledge, but they both died the year of the flood. And then we talked about the ark. So
there are tons of pictures out there. Some of them mostly look like people riding around in a bathtub with like animals flowing out of it. It's probably much more like that. That's the closest to how I, when I read the text, to see it. Here is a graphic to show a comparison to size. So it's more than a football field. So around 500 foot. And then an interesting thing of the dimensions of the ark. So the length, the width, and the depth. We now know and that that is a perfectly balanced vessel. So if you want maximum comfort, you make it really long. If you want max stability, you make it really wide. If you want maximum strength, you make it really deep. But God's measurements for the ark were perfectly balanced to handle any of those. And so we actually today, when we design ships, we use like that, those ratios to build and navigate our ships. And then the last review item we had was we talked through what was on the ark. So Noah, his wife, and then his three children and their wives. We talked about that there were clean animals, so seven pairs of clean animals, and this was just representative of some clean animals. But then the unclean animals, there's just one pair of the unclean animals, and then there was food on the ark for everyone. And so we talked through that. I think we talk about stories like there's just a pair of every kind of animal. Well, there was multiple pairs for the clean animals and one pair for the unclean. Okay, I'll stop there. That's my review. Anyone want to make comments, questions about any of that? Okay. So lesson eight. Let me read the text here. In the same day, Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons with them entered into the ship. They and every animal after its kind, all the livestock after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort. Pairs from all flesh with the breath of life in them went into the ship to Noah. Those who went in male and female of all flesh, as God commanded them. Then Yahweh shut him in. The flood was 40 days on the earth. The waters increased and lifted the ship up. It was lifted above the earth. The water rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ship floated on the surface of the waters. The waters rose very high on the earth. All the high mountains that were under the whole sky were covered. The waters rose 15 cubits higher, and the mountains were covered. All flesh died that moved on the earth, including birds, livestock, animals, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man. All the dry land in whose nostrils was breath of life died. Every living thing was destroyed that was on the face of the ground, including man, livestock, creeping things, and birds of the sky. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah was left, and those who were with him in the ship. The waters flooded the earth 150 days. God remembered Noah, all the animals and all the livestock that were with him in the ship, and God made a wind pass over the earth. The waters subsided. The deeps, fountains, and the skies, windows were also stopped, and the rain from the sky was restrained. The water continually receded from the earth. After the end of 150 days, the water receded. The ship rested in the seventh month on the 17th day of the month on Ararat's mountain. The water receded continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were visible. At the end of the 40th, at the end of 40 days, Noah opened the window of the ship, which he had made, and he sent out a raven. It went back and forth until the waters were dried up from the earth. He himself sent out a dove to see if the waters were abated from the surface of the ground. But the dove found no place to rest her foot, and she returned into the ship to him. For the waters were on the surface of the whole earth. He put out his hand and took her and brought her to him into the ship. He waited yet another 7 days, and again he sent the dove out of the ship. The dove came back to him at evening, and behold, her mouth was freshly plucked olive leaf. So Noah knew that the waters were abated from the earth. He waited yet another 7 days and sent out the dove, and she didn't return to him anymore. In the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried up from the earth. Noah removed the covering of the ship and looked. He saw that the surface of the ground was dry. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry.
I knew I was going to do that. So I haven't been sticking to chapters here, but the next line is basically says God commanded them to get to come out of the boat, which probably would have been helpful to have for the timeline too. But so the first question I had was, how pervasive was the flood? Mason? Yeah. How high was it? Mike? Yeah. So we always Genesis always seems to talk in cubic. The water rose 15 cubits higher. But yeah, so. Depending on what measurement, how we determine a cubit. Yep, that's how I think about it too, 18 to 20 inches. So we will get to this in a later question here, I think the last question. I don't know if it's just me, but I typically want to go to Mount Everest, that the water covered 15 cubits above Mount Everest. And so I think we'll talk about in question 4, like, what are the physical implications? I didn't know that Mount Everest was there. It is 15 cubits above the mountains that existed pre-flood is how I think we should think about it. I don't know, any comments on that? So the other thing, it's interesting that it calls out what died. Those that had the breath of the spirit of life died. And so we talked about this a little bit last week, but God had, and when I put up that chart of the days of creation, he's calling out the things that were filled the earth, not the things that were the form of the earth. So the things that filled the earth is what died, not the sun and the moon. But the other things that filled the earth, the things that had the life of the ground in them. So it's a little bit of a gloom picture, and so we'll talk about this a little bit because we have some examples of some pretty significant flooding that occurred just in like recent history. But as the waters came up, people would have clung to things. They would have gone to higher ground. Livestock would have tried to swim, jumped on things. Like, this would have taken a minute. People would have lived beyond like their homes being washed away. And so like this would have been a mess for some time. And I don't know, I think about Noah as building the ark in like close to other people, and so these people may have been floating outside of the ark. And how long can they survive floating around outside of the ark? Any other, Mike?
As far as he did not have air. Yeah. Yeah, there's he definitely draws this line, and there's this line between things with life and then things with, like, we could have a whole study on spirit versus soul, but I'll just say soul thing. Like, humans have something different than other things with life, but I think this would have been, like, if you put yourself in Noah and his shoes, like, there's an element where you could be like, well, you know, I'm guessing that Noah tried to warn them and you're not listening, and so good riddance. But there's another element where, like, God is destroying the corruption in the world around him, and that would have been very difficult, both from, like, realizing that this is happening, but then dealing with it when it has happened. I do not think this would have been this would have it would weigh on me if this was playing out, even though it's righteous and good judgment, it still, I think, would have been hard. Other comments, Mason?
You mentioned the things building creation that are being destroyed. But, like, the waters, some of the other days are being undone too.
Yep.
So the division of land and sea is undone. It doesn't point out darkness, but I imagine, I mean, that it's dark in storm.
Yeah. That's a great point. Other comments? Let's see. Mike, do you have something else? Yeah. Yeah, there's something they might have thought that alone, rain coming down, was a judgment, something new. So we're going to talk about when we get to chapter 9, like, for a rainbow, for this new thing to have meaning, I don't think it existed before. And so if it had been raining like we think about it raining, it wouldn't, I don't think a rainbow would have been a new thing, that they would have seen those. But we can talk about that in chapter 9. So let's talk timeline. What did you have from a timeline? Where did you start? Yeah. So... it's a little, that didn't show up very well. It's a little hard to determine. So I lumped the 7 days just before the water started that if you do some rough math on when Noah's children are born and you use that as kind of a basis, I think the maximum, would be about 75 years he was building. He had the ability and the knowledge to build the ark. That's making some assumptions that when God gave Noah the command that his all three children were born and were of marrying age, because God calls out that you, your children and their wives will come in. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case. It seems like 120 years may have been a time frame, but for him to have started building in this command, if we make the assumption that the children were there, that the max would be about 75 years.
So that's related to this, but sorry, it took me a while to find this passage. So one of the comments you made in 2 Peter 2:5, it talks about Noah being a herald of righteousness.
Yeah.
So he said,
I guess. Yeah, and so let's just say it's 75. Even if we go on the short end, can you imagine trying to do this for 50 years? Like trying to preach to people that this is coming while building this ark? I think he probably had some hard moments, but yeah, that sharing this with those around him. Okay, so brings them onto the ark. The animals are with him. Now what? Now where do you start? Yeah. Yeah, so there's an interesting, I'm going to put it up like this. It's interesting, there's a lot of commentary on the dates, but it's really based off of Noah. Like we're not given names of the months. It's like the second month, 17th day of Noah's 60th or 600th year. Like I don't know if it's based off of Noah's birth date. Like I don't know that, but we were definitely given a month and day, and how old Noah is, and we have this 40 days thing. The flood was 40 days on the earth, and we get the second month, 17th day of Noah's 600, third month, 27th day of 600. But then we get this additional look at 150 days. The waters flooded the earth 150 days. And we get an end date when I tie it to something else on here. But I think about those 150 days as being inclusive of the 40. That seemed to be the general consensus too. But so we have rain, we have water coming on the earth in some form, whether it's from the deeps, whether it's from the sky, in this period of time. But at some point in here, we get that it rested. So somewhere the waters, either the earth shifted, the waters decreased to allow it to rest on Mount Ararat, which is, you can't see it on here, but it's the seventh month of the 17th day of Noah's being 600. So that kind of marks the end of the waters coming up. What else did you have? What's next?
I had the 10th month, first day.
Yeah. Yep. And so you get another 74 days off of that. Now the tops of the mountains are visible. And so you have, and if anyone's been on a boat, you can definitely understand getting stuck on something and it not being visible, right? And especially a boat this large could easily get stuck on something. I don't think it's stuck. I think it's intentionally there, but that it rested on something below the ground, but then days later, now the tops of the mountains are visible. And so we have the waters abating. They're going down during this time. And so we get another date, but Noah does something. So after another period of time, Noah does something. What does he do? Yeah. So again, we get another time frame of Noah, but he sends out a raven after 40 days. Then what? What happens with the raven? Yeah. So what does he do? Yeah, he waits 7 days. And so this is proportional, and so the size of this is representative of the right amount of days here. So he sends out a dove. What happens to that dove? Comes back. So the dove facing to the left is coming back. And then he does what? Waits another 7 days. Sends another dove. This dove comes back with a... vegetation of some sort. So something's growing that it picks up and brings back. Then what does he do? Yep, another 7 days. Sends a dove again. This dove doesn't come back. So then he, what does he do after the last dove doesn't come back? Did you track that? Yeah. So he waits 29 days. And so here we have a shift. Noah is now 101. So it starts to feel like somewhere in there, like he had to have a birthday to represent that. I am assuming the 100 and, or 601. I don't know that he's actually 601 on that day. But the last where... So he removes the covering after 29 days after the dove comes out, and he waits another 56 days before God tells him to come out. And then we know that Noah is 601. But so the red is one period of time, and the black then is like a new year that's happening. And Noah clearly transitioned from being 600 to 601 during that time. And then that total time from getting on the ark to getting off the ark is 370 days. So I obviously made some assumptions that the 40 at the beginning was inclusive of the 150. But everything else, also I assumed, you have to make some assumptions on calendaring, right? It is interesting that Moses writing this didn't use his month and years that he would have been familiar with. He could have named them. He would have had them. If it aligns more with Egyptian, which they used roughly 30 days, they did a month reset every so often, which I just used the 30 days. Moses also would have been familiar with that, too. And so he would have had familiarity with either of kind of the dating systems. And so I roughly just said 30 days was one month. Questions, comments? On this? Imagine being on this ship for 370 days. Yeah. Yeah, the dependency on God, like you, I mean, God told him to build this thing. He did. He flooded the earth like he said he was going to do. And you just, like, no, I don't know what Noah would have known. I don't know that God said, hey, you're going to be on there 370 days. Like, he's completely dependent on God to tell him, next move, next move. Okay. What purpose did the raven and the dove serve then? Yeah. Like, what's the status of my environment around? Can I live out there? Can this bird live out there? Is this bird getting food? Does it have a place to land? Like, it's this gut check against the status of the waters. That's fair. Anything else on the dove and the raven? Doves. What are some of the physical implications of a global flood on the earth? What'd you have? So we talked about one. So I don't know that this is... I may have worded the question where you didn't get to this, but what... I was really trying to get at what's a post-flood world look like. And so we talked about one, that there rain. Likely there wasn't rain coming from the sky pre-flood. What else? We talked about a few of them a little bit. Yeah. A significant decrease in longevity of people's lives. We see it drop off significantly post-flood. We see a few people trailing off after the flood, but living longer lives, but it drops quickly to where you don't see anyone living hundreds of years anymore. Mike? Geography, there's probably I'll say new rivers, new mountains. So I just think about, like, if I walk in my backyard and I look at my creek that's behind my yard, and that flash flood, I don't even know when it was now. I was camped, so July. It is at least, so that was one day, 36 hours. And it was just rain in that creek, just runoff from around. My creek is probably 2 feet wider, and in some places probably 3 feet deeper than it was before. And so just that water rushing in, carved out, I know because I have a pipe, a drainage pipe from my house that drops into the creek, and it was sticking out about this far before. I realize you can't see when I do that. It was sticking out this far, and it is sticking out over 2 feet more than it was before. And so just something simple like that. So rivers, canyons. So there's some interesting research, and we'll talk some more about this, but we have, there's a place called, everyone calls it the Little Grand Canyon, because it looks geography with the different layers just like the Grand Canyon, but it's been formed in the last 50 years. And so it's much smaller, but it happened quickly because of, so I didn't write down the year, but Mount St. Helens, I think it was in the 80s. Caused a dam at a river, and that river bifurcated, it shot off a different way, and cut this huge cavern that wasn't there before. And it looks like the Grand Canyon, just on a small scale, because it didn't have the magnitude of water around it, but the flooding of that magnitude and that weight would carve unbelievable structures on the Earth's structure, and would cause, I think, shifting of land masses around and things colliding and pushing up and causing mountains that wouldn't have been there before. I'll talk more about that here in a minute. What else? What else? Physical implications. Yeah.
He leaves this ark, everything around him is different. So he has to reorient himself to this new world he is living in. So, I mean, physical in the sense of the world has changed, but physical in the sense of Noah living in this post-world.
Yeah. There would be nothing recognizable to him. And we talked about this before, but I think Eden was probably taken in the flood too. They probably had access to Eden prior to that, the garden, and it's probably no longer there. There could be climate implications to some of this too. I don't know if the water, the moisture that was in the air is shifted. It could cause some climate changes around the globe. Think about massive flooding on the polar caps, right? Like that would be just functionally, practically, the Earth and how it's structured would have to manage that much water at those temperatures. Could have some implications of flow of water and currents. Mason? Yeah. So there's an interesting, when you look at the layers of the earth, if you think about this massive amount of flooding and the churn that it would have created, and we're going to talk here in a minute, if we have time, about how fossils form and the sediment that comes from water and the temperature of water, the pressure of water, that when we look at fossil records or when scientists look at fossil records, generally they're assuming everything was constant to get billions and millions of years, which we know is not the case. That couldn't be. But if you layer in a catastrophe like this. Like, it changes everything. Temperature and pressure change everything about dating anything. But an interesting thing when you look at the layers is that there's this layer that has very little fossils, almost no fossils. And then there are several layers that have fossils, but they're consistent all over the world. Which suggests, so I always find it interesting, if we were to remove a flood being a religious story and just let scientists study, I think a logical conclusion would be a worldwide catastrophe had occurred, because you find these layers that exist everywhere, and then you find like regional layers that are specific to those locations. And so if you think about a massive flood covering and layering a foundation, as it goes down, you would see these localized things starting to occur. And over time, over thousands of years, you would again see these localized layers forming. But so in the fossil record, I grew up thinking and being taught that fossils took millions and millions of years to form. That is absolutely not the case. In fact, all of us here could go to a cave, I think it's in Brazil, that if we took this computer and stuck it in there, 3 months later, it would be petrified and it would look like a fossil. We have fossil records from Mount St. Helens. Not the lava, the sediment that drummed up that from the river that I was talking about, that created fossils, and they look just like fossils that they say are millions of years old. We see modern day things like watches being formed in fossil rock. Here's a fossil of a fish giving birth. So it was fossilized in the middle of giving birth, and so that didn't happen over millions and millions of years. This fish is recently uncovered. This one was in Brazil. I may be getting my Brazil mixed up. This fish, the way that it was fossilized, it has its fins, it has its scales. They've looked under a microscope. It has its cells still intact. For cells to be intact, like, decay happens. Like, when we look at fossils, when we typically think about fossils, fossils aren't the actual bones. Those have gone away. It's been replaced. It's like when you put your hand in the mud and it hardens, your hand's not there, but if you were to leave your hand there, the hand would decay and minerals would come in and it would just be a print of your hand there. This isn't a print. This is real flesh, real scales with cells fossilized. Kept. So it had to happen. For that to happen, it had to be captured away from oxygen quickly. It couldn't have happened over millions of years. And so we have situations, and there's a fern. So, like, a plant fossilized. There are things, fossils can be created quickly. I didn't know, it wasn't even time. I have a little more on the fossil record with the flood, so we'll continue this next time. But we'll talk about the rainbow too.